So I'm going to talk about three-loop planar n equals 4 super Yang mills and solving the Landau equations for the two graphs that show up in that amplitude. This is work. So I'm at Brown. I'm JJ Stankiewicz. I'm at Brown at the moment. So this is work I'm doing with Mark Spradlin, Anastasia Volovich. And then there are two grad students, and it's unclear if this is going to be one paper or two, and who will be on which papers when the dust finally settles. Right, so we're not quite done with all of this yet, but I'm hoping that once I explain the problem and this current sticking point, maybe someone will have some idea of how to untangle the messy equations that we get at the end of the day. Okay. So I'll start with an outline. First, I'm going to spend a little time motivating what I'm going to talk about. Then do some definitions and review. And then I'll look at the one loop MHV example. And then I'll discuss the current issues at three loop. Okay, so for the motivation. So typically what we're trying to do in scattering amplitudes is improve our understanding of, in this example, the mathematical structure of scattering amplitudes. And we'd also like to compute something new. And oftentimes there's feedback between these two things. Okay, so the sort of cartoon picture of the understanding we're trying to improve is how you integrate logarithmic forms. So the basic picture is how you integrate something like dz over z. This is always a good cartoon to come back to if things get confusing, because the equations that I'm going to write down are a mess. But in essence, at the end of the day, we're just asking where this integrand diverges and trying to figure out what that says about the analytic structure of the integral. Okay. So in this case, z equals 0 is a potential branch point of the integrated result. And whether or not you have to be concerned about the branch point depends on if you have a numerator in here, for example, or the contour that you choose. So my disclaimer at the start is that I'm not going to be concerned about contours of integration or about the numerators of integrands. We're, in essence, just going to be looking at where the integrand diverges and see what that says about the analytic structure of the integral. Okay. Then the thing we're going to actually focus on trying to compute is the three-loop planar n equals 4 super Yang mills scattering amplitude. And by compute, I actually mean we're just going to see if we can enumerate all the possible branch points of this amplitude using this technique.
Is there some restriction like MHV?
Oh, yeah, sorry. Thanks. Yeah, three-loop planar. Yeah, otherwise, we'd have to use Jake and Enrico's new result for the full NKMHV. Yeah.
Arbitrary point or the 4-point?
This is arbitrary point. So I'll talk about it later, but there's an expression in the literature from 2010, I think, for the endpoint integrand. Right.
And a better one from last week.
Yes, that's NKMHV, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. Right, so one of the interesting reasons to look at this is because I guess this can go back under the improve understanding category. There's a connection between these scattering amplitudes and the coordinates of a cluster algebra. So the statement is, I'm not going to focus too much on this, but it's one of the reasons we want to understand the three-loop case. The variables that show up naturally in the arguments of the logarithm functions for the amplitudes at n equals 6 and 7 point They correspond exactly to the coordinates that show up in a cluster algebra. And that's great. This is a mathematical structure. I'm not going to go into too much detail on it. But there's a finite number of coordinates that show up in there, and they happen to be exactly the same coordinates that show up in the argument of the amplitude. For n greater than 7, there's an infinite number of cluster algebra coordinates, so it's not entirely clear what's going on. So one of the things that I can say concretely is that we expect that there are a finite number of solutions to the Landau equations, so a finite number of branch points. So clearly, we're not going to need the entire set of infinite cluster coordinates. So that's one of the, and again, once we have the data for this three-loop case, we can actually probe this in a little more detail and see what's going on at three-loop. OK. So now the Landau equations, I'll just briefly motivate what they are. So they determine where the integrand vanishes. Where the integrand has poles. So again, the cartoon is just where this denominator gets set to 0. There's an associated picture that if you look at the analytic S matrix from the book from the 70s, for example, you have some contour, and you have points in the space of external kinematics. If your contour goes through these points, and as you dial these points around, they pinch the contour, that's where the Landau equations will, in essence, tell you where this happens. I'm not going to spend too much time on the geometric pictures, because there's other stuff to talk about, but you can look in the ELOP book from the 70s for that. OK, and I sort of mentioned this, but I'm going to be agnostic about contours of integration. That's kind of a sticky topic anyways, so I'm just going to ignore it. And then the numerators. So in some sense, you could think of the Landau equations as telling you all possible branch points. And then the contour and the numerators dictate which subset of the branch points actually show up in the integrated result. Another interesting connection that I'll mention briefly is we're trying to tie the integrand to the integrated result. So there's a connection to the amplitudehedron. So this is work that Mark, Anastasia, Tristan, and the two grad students, so Tristan, Mark, now let's do it in alphabetical order. Igor is one of the grad students, Mark, Stefan Stojanovic. So he has a very similar last name to mine. And also, we have a GG Fan in the department, so it sometimes gets very confusing between JJ and Stojanovic and Anastasia. So the positivity conditions in the amplitudehedron, they showed, in essence, select the same set of branch points as the Landau equations. They do even further than that. They restrict the Landau equations to the set that show up in the actual integrated result of possible branch points that appear in the amplitude. So in some sense, what I'm going to do is just solve the Landau equations to generate a set of all possible branch points, then use positivity conditions and some other constraints that I'll mention to limit down to the actual integrated space, or the actual set of branch points that can show up in the integral. Right, so these techniques work. I'll review a little bit of how these work at one and two loop. So the Landau equations give exactly the branch points. Oh. that one and two loop. Those are more or less straightforward to solve. The two loop, we don't have all of the integrals, but you can check that the entries that show up in the Landau, or the solutions you get to the Landau equations are at the entries that show up in the MHV amplitude. So the question is, how we expect that the same story extends to three loops, so we're just going to probe what happens at three loops exactly. So a caveat is the Landau equations tell you what the roots of the alphabet should be, or they tell you what the branch points should be. In n equals 4, observationally, we see that solving the Landau equations actually gives exactly what the alphabet is, which doesn't have to be the case. OK, so that's the motivational part. I'll go into do some review and definitions now. Okay, so basically what we want to do is write down a Feynman integral and compute it. One way you can do that is by going to the Feynman parameterization. I'm just going to assume that most people know roughly how this works and just write down the Feynman parameterized integral, and probably just schematically. Down here. So once you Feynman parameterize, you split what used to be propagators up into a sum with the Feynman parameters and the propagators. And I'll do a very concrete example in a second with the bubble. All right, so you split the Feynman propagators up into a sum of Feynman propagators, and typically these are easier to integrate. So one point that we're investigating now is there's no one that says you have to integrate the expression by going to Feynman parameters. So we're going to explore what happens to trying to integrate things or approach these, basically the denominator blowing up in different ways. Okay. So right, the possible branch points. Again, you can think back to the cartoon of the dz over z form. Branch points occur at the denominator vanishing. And of course, it becomes a much more complicated statement because there's more variables than just the one in the dz over z case. But in essence, that's what we're going to probe. The two cases, so to set this to zero, you can either have some subset of the alphas to zero or some subset of the propagators going to zero and various combinations thereof. So one useful thing about the Feynman parameterization is that it helps organize the manner in which the denominator gets set to zero. So we found at one point we were a little confused because the typical statement is you count the number of alphas that you set to zero, but we actually think now it's a little more sensible to count the number of uncut propagators. So I'll explain that in a little more detail. There are two different things you can set to zero. One is the simple thing is to set alpha I to zero for some subset of the i's. And if you set some, so if you kill some of the alpha i's, then the other stuff that has to get set to zero are the propagators. Right. So these look familiar to people who study unitarity. So these are cut conditions. Right. So you can repackage this information into what get called the Landau equations. I'm not going to go through too much detail about how you land on this form of the Landau equations, but we're just going to sort of take it as a starting point and see where it takes us. So you can repackage these two conditions into the Landau equations. There's a so-called Kirchhoff condition, because it's similar. Well, I guess Kirchhoff came up with this idea of momentum conservation around the graph, for example, electric circuits and the current. So you sum over all propagators in a loop, and you just set the Feynman parameter associated with the propagator times the loop momentum in the propagator to zero, and this is for all loops. And again, I'll go through a concrete example of all this in a second. And the other condition is just the cut, the unitarity conditions, the cut conditions. So we can organize, I'll refer to these as cut conditions throughout. We can organize by the number of propagators that are not set to zero. So in some sense, this is an n to the k max cut if you leave k propagators uncut. So if you look in the ELOP book, they count by the number of alphas that you set to zero, but we found that to be somewhat confusing. It's one of the reasons we got hung up for a while on this story. Okay, so I'm going to be drawing diagrams. I'll call them Landau diagrams or Landau graphs, and they just encode these two conditions. So for example, if we look at a one-mass box, if I draw this and refer to this as the leading Landau singularity diagram for the box, it just means I write down alpha 1, q 1, all four of the propagators here. And I set all four of the propagators on shell. And from now on, I'm just going to drop the mass. I'm not going to care about that in n equals 4 superangles stuff. So all four of the propagators to zero. Then a subleading, so this is called a leading Landau singularity. All of the propagators are on shell. A subleading one is you release one cut condition and also set one of the alphas to zero. So an example is we release, let's say, Q1 squared, not equal to zero. So in essence, we just collapse the propagator associated with Q1. So there's an equivalent diagram. Again, this encodes a three-term Kirchhoff condition, and you set three propagators on shell. So we'll use that kind of terminology. Okay, so let's actually go through in a little more detail the bubble example. So there's Q1 with loop momentum L, the loop momentum, and Q2 is L minus K. Okay, so we want to compute the leading Landau singularity for this. It just means we set Q1 squared to 0, Q2 squared to 0, and alpha 1 Q1 plus alpha 2 Q2 to 0. So let's just say we're in four dimensions. So this has an uncontracted index on it. One of the natural things you can do is contract this into a basis of four, or into four basis vectors. So I'll just call the basis vectors B. I'll just put a minus on there for convenience. So I is 1, 2, 3, 4, just the number of dimensions. You can take the Kirchhoff condition and repackage it as, you can at least rewrite it as a matrix. It seems to be a little misleading to think of it as a linear equation in the alphas, but we'll talk about that in a second. Right, so these taus are now just contractions of the Qs with the Bs. And the Kirchhoff condition is just repackaged this way. So it's an overcomplete system of equations. And the question is, we have to satisfy this system of equations that allows us to impose constraints on the external kinematics and also to impose constraints on the unfixed degrees of freedom of loop momentum. So the claim of the Landau equations is that if we can satisfy this equation and this equation simultaneously, that should give us the branch points of the integrated expression. So we can see how that works in detail now.
But where do these Kirchhoff equations now come? I mean, before you said the alphas to zero or the all the propagators to zero, right? Inverse propagators to zero. And now, I mean, I didn't quite understand where did this Kirchhoff rule come from, the logic.
So in this, okay, so the counting is the level of the Landau singularity. You can think of it as either the number of alphas you set to zero or the number of propagators you do not set to zero. Mm-hmm. Traditionally, it's presented as setting the number of alphas you set to zero, but we found that very misleading in some cases. So in this case, we're releasing zero of the cuts, it's the leading Landau singularity. We're setting zero of the alphas to zero, so it's the leading Landau singularity. Does that answer the question?
No, the role of the Kirchhoff equations is not...
Yeah, so I didn't motivate that very well. You can derive these in various ways. One way to think about them is they are conditions. So I drew the picture earlier of the contour getting pinched, and you can think of this as a normal condition in this space that tells you that the two points are pinching the contour. I don't want to get into too much detail on that, but you can read various. There are various ways of thinking about this. So the Kirchhoff conditions are actually the ones that are giving us the trouble, right? There's a lot of technology for solving cut conditions, but the Kirchhoff ones are a little less clear what to do with them. And I should say they work in, for example, the four-mass box in four dimensions. Everything's fine. You can compute that straightforwardly. But in the higher loop cases, it becomes confusing how to solve this system. Right. Is that okay? Yeah, it's not a super satisfying answer, I know, but... Again, this is part of the... We don't have a very good intuition for how to solve this system of equations. So that's partially the sticking point.
But geometrically, to just mean that, like, where the pinched surfaces become, like, where you can have, like, these tangential surfaces pinching your contour. So, like, the normal... It's a statement about the normal vectors coming once they come close together. And that's basically the rule of these Landau equations, of the Kirchhoff rule.
Yeah, again,
Yeah, I'll talk to you later.
Yeah, that's fine. Okay, so we want to satisfy this system of equations if we're on shell. So we satisfy these two cut conditions. That sets T1 minus 1 and T1 minus 2 to 0. And you can, T2 minus 2. So this is just Q1 squared. I'm choosing a basis now where B1 and B2 are just the two propagators, and I have two unspecified basis vectors. So this corresponds to Q1 squared equals to Q2 squared equals 0. And you can also check that the off-diagonal elements are just the mass parameter in the bubble. Okay, so this system now looks like this. And we have four unfixed degrees of freedom down here. I'll just call them A, B, C, and D. So again, it's now a little misleading that I wrote this as a matrix, because we're actually, one example solution is if all of the entries sitting here are zero, this solves the Kirchhoff system trivially. And that would give us, in this case, a many codimension constraint on the external kinematics. Another dumb solution to this is setting all of the alphas to zero, but that will impose no additional constraints on the external kinematics. So one way to organize this is to set. If we set alpha 1 and alpha 2 to zero, that's a trivial constraint. There's no additional information in the Kirchhoff conditions, so we can try to set alpha 1 to zero, alpha 2 non-zero.
Sorry, are those first two entries telling you that alpha 1 and alpha 2 have to be 0 separately?
Well, so there are various cases. So one in the alpha 1 is equal to 0, alpha 2 is not equal to 0 case.
Then k squared equals 0?
Then, yeah. So in this case, yeah, you'd have k squared, alpha 2 is 0. And you'd also impose additional constraints on these degrees of freedom. So... I've got a four-dimensional loop momentum vector. Up till now, I've only imposed two constraints on it, so there are still two unfixed degrees of freedom. This fixes one of those degrees of freedom. This fixes the other. So now I've completely localized to a point in loop momentum space. And then there's an additional constraint of codimension 1 on the external kinematics. And this is the this is actually the branch point that shows up in the integrated expression. Right. So that's fine. That's one case. The alpha 1 is non-zero, alpha 2 is 0. It's a similar solution. You actually get, you can fix A and C and set K squared to 0. That's the other thing you can do. But then the more confusing thing, well, at one loop it's okay, but at when this is embedded in a higher graph, if you allow neither alpha 1 to be 0 nor alpha 2 to be 0, so I already mentioned you can get a you can have a system of constraints where you set k squared is equal to, you can set basically every element that shows up in this matrix to 0. And that imposes, so two of these would fix the unfixed degrees of freedom in the loop momentum. This would impose then three constraints on the external kinematics. So we're not, we haven't been able to, we don't have a good interpretation for what happens when you have higher codimension constraints like that. We're operating on the assumption that you're just looking for solutions of codimension one in the space of external kinematics, and those are your branch points. Again, we can talk about that. We've been thinking about that for a while, aren't sure if there's a better interpretation of it, so. Okay. So, right. And I should mention in the box case in four dimensions, you have a 4x4 matrix. The only codimension one constraint you have is that the determinant of that matrix vanishes. So it's very straightforward. Those are the Gram determinants that showed up in Ruth's talk, for example. And just to, in case I don't get to talk about it in too much detail later, problems occur when you have, for example, a bubble showing up embedded in a larger diagram. So I showed that there's a codimension 1 solution to the Kirchhoff subsystem, there's a codimension 3 solution to the Kirchhoff subsystem. So it's currently not clear what the best way is to identify the codimension 1 solutions that we want to extract. Okay. So that's as detailed as I'll get, I think. I'll be a little more schematic with the one-loop MHV example. So more or less, this problem of counting the correct number of constraints is the sticking point at the moment. We can handle every other part of the problem. Okay, so the one loop example, the one loop MHV example that Mark, Anastasia, and Tristan had in 2015 is a little more straightforward to deal with. So in that case, you can write the ratio of the one loop amplitude to the tree. So this is at n point as an integral. I'm not going to be more, I'm just going to be somewhat schematic here. The details don't matter all that much for what I'm going to talk about. Okay, so you can write this as an integral. So this is an integrand. It has propagators given by, well, I'll just label this one, for example. So in loop momentum space, it'd just be L minus K squared. We're going to work in momentum twister space. I don't want to spend too much time going through the details, but going through the details of how to convert. We can just take it as a given that that's the propagator in these loop momentum twister variables. So, and in this case, we actually have an integrated expression. I won't write down all of the indices and all that fun stuff, but there's a U with some set of indices here. And there are four more terms like this. And there's a log-log term. So this is actually what you get if you integrate this expression. You get something that's a sum of dilogs and a product of logs. Okay. So the question, or I guess you could say in some sense this was an observation, What we can do is look at the solution to the Landau equations associated with this integrand and actually see that they exactly predict the things that show up here. So this works very well at one loop because there's no confusion about multi-loop embedding of lower loop diagrams. So I'll go through this. The precise statement is that the solution to the Landau equations match the entries of the alphabet for this symbol, the symbol alphabet for this integrated expression. So I'll briefly mention both sides of that story and show you, in some sense, or show you exactly how that matching happens, or show you how they observe that that matching happens. So if we solve, for example, the leading Landau singularity for this pentagon, it's a similar to Kirchhoff conditions. It's just one loop, so you don't have to sum over multiple loops. There's only one constraint. And there are these four on-shell conditions that I can just write directly in loop momentum space, momentum twister space. So if we set, so in this case, the leading Landau singularity means I set all of the propagators on shell. In this case, so one possible solution to this, you can go home and check if you want, is that the line in loop momentum twister space is just the line ij in twister space. That sets the first four equations on shell. But then there's this fifth propagator that the Landau equations tell us to set on shell, and that imposes a constraint on the external kinematics. Right, so it turns out that this one does not actually show up in the symbol. None of the leading Landau singularities don't. This happens to be the normalization of the integrand that makes it unit leading singularity. Okay, so. And in this case, there are no additional constraints, so we have to check and make sure we don't get additional constraints on the external kinematics from here. Then we're not sure what to do. But so one way you could say this is that it's a linear combination of five four-dimensional vectors, and then that always has a solution. Another way of writing this is as a matrix. Matrices I referenced a few times. So this is an under-constrained system. There's always going to be a one-parameter family of solutions you can get from that. So there at least exists a solution to the Landau equations that don't impose additional constraints on the external kinematics. Okay, so a slightly less trivial example is a sub-leading Landau singularity because that one actually shows up in the symbol. So I actually want to consider two subleading Landau singularity cases. So in one case, we'll set, let me redraw the diagram without any of its, without its numerator dressing. Okay. So if we set, for example, the if we release the k plus 1 cut condition, so we're going to look at a subleading Landau singularity where lk plus 1 is not put on shell. So again, I mentioned earlier we can draw an associated Landau diagram. And one thing that, so Mark and Anastasia worked on this in the positivity amplitude-hedron story, you can actually find a coloring of this on-shell diagram that is MHV, which is to put white vertices here and these guys here. Okay, so the statement is that this is an on-shell diagram. It should give the residue of the amplitude. The Grassmann weight of this you can compute by counting the Grassmann weight of all of the elements of the graph that you sew together. So these colored vertices, the empty vertices have Grassmann weight 1. The multivalent vertices have weight greater than or equal to 2. And the on-shell, the propagators, have weight equal to minus 1. So you can check that the total Grassmann weight for this on-shell diagram is 2, or is bigger than or equal to 2. So this can be, the amplitude has support on this cut, you could say. The residue is non-zero there. And it turns out that the solution that you get to the Landau equations, you can actually just read it off from here. There, you can solve the four cut conditions. It's a two-mass easy box. We know how to write that solution down in loop momentum twister space. There's an associated Kirchhoff condition that comes from the box. And you can actually just see that the solution to the Landau equations at the end of the day is this. And that the MHV amplitude has that as a symbol entry. So there's a different case where if we set, for example, the alpha 1, if we release the alpha 1 or the Q1 squared cut condition, we can't draw we can't find an MHV coloring of the graph. So it's 2, 4, 6, 7, minus 4. So this always has weight greater than or equal to 3. So this the amplitude doesn't have support on this cut. And if we go through and compute what the subleading Landau singularity is for this, we see that it doesn't show up in the MHV amplitude, the integrated result. So this is a slightly refined story that they didn't have when they initially wrote down this table. But what they did in the first paper was they just went through, listed out all of the Landau singularities, and checked whether or not they were entries in first symbol entries or second symbol entries, and effectively saw that if you go down through subsquared Landau leading singularities, the solutions that you get all show up as symbol entries.
Okay. One quick question. So is there a statement that the integral? Oh no. Okay, sorry. The integral has support on this cut? No, it doesn't. On the non-MHV cuts. So does this function, if you take the symbol of this integral function, does this have entries in the letter that cancel in the amplitude, but in the individual integrals? Do these symbol letters show up?
Okay, yeah, so this is a statement about the whole amplitude, yeah. So you're asking if that...
If this function over there, if you take the symbol of this function that's written on the board,
the hexagon, the pentagon, yeah.
Does this have symbol entries that are associated with Landau, subleading Landau singularities associated to these diagrams?
Right, so we didn't try to address that question specifically. We listed all possible branch points that could show up given you're writing the amplitude in that expansion, and then we used this MHV condition to say that one doesn't show up in the amplitude itself. Okay, so I won't go through the... All right. So I'm not going to talk about it in too much detail, but you can... They took the known integrated response, and you can compute with basically the list of things that show up in the arguments of the logs and dialogs and just match the two. So it's a pretty straightforward thing. And of course, at one loop, this is fine because the known answer is sitting there. At two loops, there's not quite as much data. I guess Simone is written down the symbol for the whole amplitude. And they checked that if you go to subcube leading Landau singularities, all of the solutions to the Landau equations exactly match the symbol entries that are currently known. But again, there's no statement about the actual integrands. It's just a statement about the amplitude. The data is just not complete at two loops. And then at three loops, at three loop endpoint, we have almost none of this information. So in some sense, this story of Landau equations is one way to start addressing that question. Okay, so let me talk a little bit about the three loop story. Just to show you, again, where the sticking points are. Okay, so the algorithm we want to try here. Is to solve the Landau equations and use that to generate a list of all potential branch points. Then we want to select MHV branch points, or we want to select Landau diagrams associated with k equals 2 on shell functions. So selecting out just the ones that can show up in the MHV amplitude. And we also want to select only codimension 1 constraints because we don't know how to handle higher codimension constraints. So, and observationally, and by direct computation, this worked at 1 and 2 loops, so we're hoping something similar happens for 3 loops, or at least gives us a good probe into what's going on. Okay, so the 3-loop amplitude, or the integrand, I should say, is written down by...
You drew that example over there. You said, look, there's a problem when you embed the bubble.
Yes.
But you drew 2 loops, so...
Yeah, I can make it 3 loops. Same problem.
But then you just said there are 2 loops here, everything...
Yeah, so they...
So what was the...
They had an end condition in that they had some finite set of data they were trying to match from the symbol computations. So as soon as they saw all of those show up in the Landau leading singularities, there was no need to keep going. So they didn't necessarily probe this far down.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But
3 loops we don't have. I mean, there, of course, there's some data, and we'll check in finite n cases, but it doesn't seem to be much computationally different to do n point versus 8 point or 7 point at this point.
But where that all worked out nicely, that was at the amplitude level, right? Not
correct. Yeah, not the actual integral, too. Yeah. But, so, yeah, what we're doing is computing...
Problematic stuff.
Yeah. We have the amplitude expanded in integrals or in integrands, and we compute all possible branch points from those integrands and then use conditions to select the ones that show up in the amplitude, so the whole sum. Yeah. Okay, so the 3 loop. The amplitude can be written in terms of 2 integrands. This is from Jake and Nima and Freddy and Yaroslav. Again, somewhat schematically, there's a triple hexagon integral. So one thing I should point out here is that you can define this integral with a finite number of indices. So I mentioned earlier that the cluster coordinates that you see for n greater than 7 are infinite. But already here, the fact that we can label at least one of the integrands with a finite number of indices suggests we should probably be able to find a finite number of branch points. I don't think anyone was claiming that you have to, that the alphabet for this amplitude would be infinite. But this is, again, a nice concrete check of that fact. That's one of the terms. The other one, just for completeness, is a 2 pentagons and a hexagon. And I'm not going to, there's, again, a finite number of indices associated with this. And Enrico, Yaroslav, and Jake just put out, this is the MHV amplitude. Enrico, Yaroslav, and Jake just put out an all-K MHV amplitude. So if we get technology set up at this level, we could pretty easily jump to the NK MHV. Expression. Okay, so I'm just going to briefly.
Mm-hmm. Comment about the transfer algebra.
Yes.
This is a 3 loops, right? So, and the cluster algebra doesn't know anything about the loop level. So, in principle, you could expect that as you go to higher loops, you keep having
things
with more indices and then more.
Yes.
And more.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
So, well, I mean, I was going to say this for later, but so where do you expect the elliptic stuff to show up in the story in Landau equations?
So the statement is that I believe the Landau equations will still tell you where the roots are.
Sure.
Yeah,
where
that's
the... Like the infinity of letters?
We haven't probed that very deeply at the moment.
because it looks like the iterated Landau equations are guaranteed to truncate at a fixed loop level.
Right.
But somehow we should see some explosion of possible letters.
Yeah, so that's something we'll have to probe in the future. It's not clear at the moment. Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, the Landau equations just tell you where the denominator gets set to zero. So that shouldn't fail regardless of square roots in the denominator.
Yeah, but you should see that there are no poles associated with those.
Yeah.
Zero.
Yeah. So we haven't addressed that quite yet.
So sorry, you just made a remark about exploring non-MHV at three loops, but can you remind me what is known about non-MHV amplitudes at one and two loops?
I don't know off the top of my head what's been computed.
I mean, we have closed forms for all of them.
In a story, I don't know if it.
Yeah, I mean, at one loops, you'd expect that the same kind of that everything goes through nicely, but at two loops, you're going to face the elliptics again. And so something new has got to happen at 10-point at two loops.
Yeah, that's.
Okay.
So that's again something we could explore. Yeah, right. Yeah. Right. So the large scale idea of what the Landau equations do should be fine, but it's not clear what happens with elliptic integrals. That's okay. So I'll just talk briefly about the triple hexagon integral, and the story should be very similar for the other double pentagon hexagon integral. So one thing we can talk about right away is that the leading Landau singularities of this, it's just the diagram we would draw is the full thing. This sets 15 propagators on shell. There are only 12 degrees of freedom of the loop momentum. So this imposes a net constraint of codimension 3 in the space of external kinematics. And we don't know what to do with that. We're just going to assume it's not a branch point of the amplitude. Again, I'm up to discussing this if anyone has ideas on how to interpret that. So again, the same counting says that the subleading Landau singularities have codimension 2. So the first time you can see something that's potentially codimension 1 is the subsquared leading Landau singularities. It turns out that you can't find an MHV coloring for a diagram at this level. It's just something we checked out. You can take the graphs, find all of the contracted edges, the graphs with contracted edges, and just see if you can find a coloring of the graph. It turns out you can't do that at the subsquared leading level. And similarly at the subcubed leading level. So no MHV colorings. And we should be able to play a similar game with different NK MHV levels too. You can still ask if there exist colorings that permit that level of counting. So the first example we can look at, is it sub 4? So that means we're setting two propagators on shell, or four propagators on shell. So the diagram looks like this. This is one sub to the fourth leading Landau singularity diagram. Make sure I put the massive edges in the right spot. So if you color all of the trivalent vertices white, and these guys are all, and the massive corners are all k greater than or equal to 2, you can actually count that this has that k can be equal to greater than or equal to 2 here. So this is a possible the amplitude should have support on this cut, is the statement. So we can look at the leading Landau the singularities associated with this Landau diagram. Or that would be, yeah.
Why don't you have the MHV kissing boxes?
So the kissing boxes would be this. So this is, when you have unshared edges between graphs, you can actually just write down a codimension one, at least a codimension one constraint for each graph. So this sets 12 propagators on shell, but then there are three additional Kirchhoff conditions that you have to satisfy. So this again gives codimension three. But yeah, you can add MHV counting here. Sorry, I missed that. Yeah. Does that answer? Yeah. Okay. All right, so for this guy, I'll write down what the... Again, we can satisfy the cut conditions fairly straightforwardly. That's well-understood technology. So if this is L1, L2, and L3, and I'll just put labels on the edges too. Just for ease, for reference in writing down the Kirchhoff conditions in a second. But you can localize all degrees of freedom of L1 by putting these four propagators on shell. You can localize all four degrees of freedom of, let's say, L2. You can pick, but there's four degrees of freedom you can localize here. And that leaves three conditions on three of the three degrees of freedom in L3. So the counting is L3 has one unfixed degree of freedom. So this means we need we need to generate two constraints, one of which fixes the one degree of freedom of L3, and another which poses a constraint on external kinematics. That could also show up as two constraints on the one remaining degree of freedom of L3, for example. So we need two additional constraints. And basically, the whole question boils down to whether or not we can solve the system of Kirchhoff conditions for a codimension to fix two of to find these last two constraints on the degrees of freedom in the problem. So if we were to write down, just to give you a sense of what this looks like, if we write down the Kirchhoff conditions for this, there are three equations, one per loop. The first one is alpha 1 q1 plus alpha 4 q4. Plus the two shared edges, 9 and 10 in this case, 9 and 11 in this case. So as a reminder, these all have uncontracted indices on them as written, or in the Kirchhoff, in the original version of the Kirchhoff equations. The second, the L2 Kirchhoff condition is alpha 5 q5 plus alpha 6 Q6 plus the two shared edges, which are alpha 9 Q9 and alpha 10 Q10. And then we have alpha 7 Q7 plus alpha 8 Q8 and alpha 10 Q10, alpha 11 Q11. So going back to this statement about the kissing boxes, the main problem happens because we have these shared edges between cycles of the graph. If these aren't here, the systems totally decouple, and we can just write down the codimension one. We can write down a codimension one, at least a codimension one constraint for each box. As I mentioned with the bubble, we could also find higher codimension constraints that solve the Kirchhoff conditions. Right, so if we were to write this in its matrix form, just to give you some, maybe it's a slightly easier way to visualize what's going on, maybe not. So it's going to be a 12, it's 3 times 4 equations, and there are 11 entries in the matrix. And we can say the 1 through 4 block here just has some set of taus, some block of taus associated with it. The 5 through 6 block has some taus associated with it for loop 1. And the 7 through 8 have some taus. And then there are the two shared edges, 9 and 11, I guess I made it. And then there would be zeros on the... those should be zeros here. 9 and 10 are the shared edges here. So these are, in some sense, a matrix of taus, or an embedded submatrix. And these are just actual honest tau at the shared edges of the graph. So at first, we thought maybe there was some nice story with looking at subdeterminants of the matrices, but it's the question is basically, how do you solve this system? And again, there's one very straightforward solution that's very high codimension, which is to set all of the taus sitting in this matrix to zero. That's one. That's a high codimension solution. We could, again, try to organize the space of solutions by the number of alphas we set to zero, but that gets very big. That becomes a very hard problem very quickly. There's lots of lots of subsets of that group. So in essence, this is the sticking point. We're not sure exactly how to even identify the right codimension constraints from this set of equations. And again, at one loop, this is all very straightforward. This is a square matrix. There's the codimension one constraint just comes from setting the determinant to zero. Right, so some of this, even
when
just
you say the system gets big when you subdivide it, what do you mean by big?
It's only 12 equations, but they become polynomial when you start bag substituting. So it becomes a relatively small system of polynomial equations in the variables.
Can you give like orders of magnitude of what?
It's hard because I don't have a good intuition for polynomial systems. I mean, the system looks fairly safe to solve, but if you start, it's because it's polynomial, so it's hard to wrap my head around exactly what it means for the size of the system. So for one of the simple three-loop examples, we used reduce in Mathematica to see if it would solve, and it ran for 5 days, and then it timed out, so. I've played around with some Grobner basis software, but again, even if you get a Grobner basis, it's not totally clear what to do with that to identify the correct the solution. Yeah. But some of the things that we've looked at, or even just talking to people here, in principle, we could just immediately integrate out. Integrate the loop momentum. So this gives us the graph polynomials, and what we're left with effectively are integrals that are something like this. And then the Landau equations become effectively a set of just the d alphas acting on the f's. But again, this is polynomial. The degrees of freedom are the external kinematics and the alphas. So it's going to be a similar system to this, but it's some coupled system of multilinear equations. Another option is to not Feynman parameterize. Again, I mentioned this earlier, but no one says you have to Feynman parameterize to compute these things. That's just a nice computational trick. And in this case, we can actually look at the story of iterated residues. So, for example, the stuff Ruth, the Loret residues that Ruth talked about a couple days ago. You can interpret residues as cut conditions, and these cut conditions should land you in exactly the same place that part of the Landau system tells you to go. And there's also an observation that maybe the Jacobian that you get from computing these residues is exactly the Kirchhoff condition. So it's unclear. Perhaps there's some sense in which exploring composite residues takes you to different codimension one constraints on the Kirchhoff conditions. That's something we're going to look at in more detail. Right. So this would, in some sense, just give us an organizational procedure for finding the codimension one constraints in the space of external kinematics. So that's more or less all I had to say. So just to reiterate, what you can do is compute the Landau equations, then there's an observation in planar n equals 4 super Yang Mills that those exactly give you the entries that show up in the symbol. There are more complicated cases, but we're just looking at our favorite model of n equals 4. And one nice thing about solving this sort of general approach we're taking to try and solve the Kirchhoff conditions is the numerators don't matter, the contours of integration don't matter. In some sense, you can put all that stuff in by hand after the fact. That's it. Thanks.
Thank you. Maybe you could say some more about these equations, the complexity of solving them. I still don't have a good feel for what the real problem is.
So I was talking with Mao, who's a postdoc at UCLA the other day, who's been working with Grosvenor basis algebraic geometry packages to try and solve systems of equations like this. So I can phrase it in terms of things Mathematica can and can't do, because it's as good a metric as any.
What about a dumb approach? Because you're interested in where the location of singularities are, so you might think you might attach the problem numerically to try to pin down the locations.
I think one of the issues is that everything that shows up in the equations is a degree of freedom in principle, is something you're trying to isolate. So for example, in this picture, if we were to integrate out the loop momentum, this is a function of the alphas and the Mandelstam invariants, and we're looking for the space where both the alpha, we can set alphas or Mandelstam invariants or some combination of the two to zero. So is that something you can still probe numerically?
System. Well, kind of hopeless.
Yeah, okay, so the simplest example that Mathematica can do and reduce in a finite number of minutes is the four-mass box. You can just write down the Kirchhoff matrix for this, hit reduce, and it returns a list of 20 solutions that set out various combinations of alphas reduced to zero. One of which is, of course, the codimension, the determinant condition getting set to zero, but there's a whole another solution is setting all of the degrees of freedom that's within the Kirchhoff matrix to zero. Yeah. I looked with Mao yesterday at the two loop. I believe it was the double pentagon. And this is also the example we let run for 5 days on Mathematica. Yeah. And it didn't finish. Just a dumb thing.
Order of magnitude. How many solutions are there total? You said one loop, you have about 20. Is it billions, trillions?
I don't know. I don't know how to count, even. Yeah.
And what about a two loop? Even there you can't...
I think, I'd have to go back and look. I think this is the one we've let run for a few... Mark just put an arbitrary, picked a random time limit, and it didn't finish in that amount of time. So, but that was trying the dumbest thing, which is just reduce in Mathematica. But in some sense, that's the output we want, is the full space of solutions, not...
I guess what I'm driving at, the question I don't have a feel for is it hopeless in the sense of, like, the number of solutions is so great you possibly can't brute force it, or is it that it's just large?
Yeah. Yeah, so if we let it run for a year or something, maybe it would work. I don't know. It's hard to say at the moment.
Yeah, but some problems, you know, you're dealing with trillions of solutions.
Reduces in Mathematica is not very impressive.
Yeah. No, I know. I understand that. Yeah.
Better also because this type of problem is not that popular.
Right. So, all we really care about is if we give it this graph input, can we identify all of the solutions of codimension one? But even I'm not sure how to identify that space without having some knowledge of. It's.
I see. So you don't even know the size of the problem.
Correct. And even in this example, there are 20 solutions, only one of which I care about. So I, yeah.
Sorry, maybe a naive question, but I mean the symbol is known for 6 and 7 at three loops. So how does that give you any data? Can you kind of bootstrap that? Or
I think if none of the stuff I've thought about the last few weeks here comes through, we'll just look at those examples and see what happens there. But in principle, the systems aren't that much smaller at 6 and 7.
But there's no.
You know the answer, right? Yeah. So we could do that. But if we can get, we can do infinitely better than that in principle, we can get the all in.
Since this approach is pretty general, do you have a sense of what role is being played by the fact you're working with planar n equals 4?
I mean, the Landau equations should always identify the branch points of any integral, regardless of contour or numerator. So in some sense, the only theories, well, maybe the physics, the QFT specific part is the contour, and the theory specific part is the numerator, you could say. Yeah.
Well, here you're also kind of putting everything under the same denominator, and that's why you use these MEG conditions. And
Yeah, that's true.
Right,
too.
So that
yeah.
you cannot do it with non-linear.
Yeah. Right, but you could still identify all possible branch points and maybe find some other method for selecting the ones that you care about for the theory you're interested in.
Yes, I mean, there's several examples I could think of. One, for example, is why are you not seeing these second-type singularities? Maybe they just don't come up for this class of amplitudes.
Yeah, we haven't.
Oh, okay. You're not seeing them because you're not looking for them.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
Principle
does
show up in this symbol, and in principle you could have integrals that aren't pure that you're working
with. Yes, that's true.
Okay. But, yeah, but it could all be related to the fact you're working with.
Yeah, that could be too. Yes.
Very likely, but you haven't.
I totally bypassed that. Yeah, we haven't thought about that much. Yep.
How does this work when you have singularities? All of these intervals work. Have you explored? You have IR singularities, for instance. What role does it tell you anything?
Well, so for the one massless corner on the triangle is one example. You can find solutions to the Landau equations for any point in kinematic space. They talk about this a little bit in the first paper with Tristan.
Any more comments, questions? Anyone know how large it's solved that? Okay. Anyway, let's thank